You're listening to Irish Sports Talk.
Hello, Notre Dame fans. Welcome to Irish Sports Talk. This is episode 437, and we're here to talk about Notre Dame's victory over Navy, the nail-biter. Wow, nail-biter of a victory.
Were you worried about it at all?
I was. I definitely was. Going into it, I felt pretty confident that Notre Dame was going to win this game. But then as time went on, maybe at halftime, it just didn't seem like this was going to be the case.
Well, I was at this miserable game. And I'm saying miserable because the weather was absolutely horrible.
You want to know something interesting, Randall?
What's that?
According to ESPN, Navy won the game 17-10.
What?
Yes.
Oh, you're right.
I'm not sure what's going on, but anyway.
I just looked.
If you, at least when you go on the preview page, when you have it in the score page, I believe it shows it 24-17. But yeah, I was worried. I was worried even after halftime. I was definitely worried before that because I thought Notre Dame would be able to score more easily than they did. I thought overall the defense did a better job. They did get stops. It wasn't that Navy put up, 30-plus points, which is kind of what I was expecting. My score prediction was Navy scoring 27, Notre Dame 38. You did have them. Actually, you had their score right on, Randall. You had them at 17.
Yeah, this week we were actually pretty close. I mean, I had their score right. I predicted 34-17. I figured it would just come down to possessions. And really, Notre Dame should have scored 34. I mean, they had the chance to score that, and the offense just couldn't do it. But I definitely feel better about my prediction being more accurate than it was against Miami. And while we're talking about that, the winning score prediction for this week, there was actually a tie. And I will say there were some smart people because they must have been listening to the podcast because they predicted the exact score I did. And that ended
up
being
also,
the closest.
You were also the closest.
So I'd have been the third one. But there were two guys that won, one on Twitter and one on Instagram. On Instagram is S. Stouter. He predicted 34-17. And then on Twitter, it was Cajun_Irish. And he predicted 34-17 as well. So I guess we'll be handing out 2 pounds of coffee this week. And way to listen to the podcast and pick the right score.
I feel the defense did well enough. Last year, Notre Dame ended up having 7 possessions, one more than last year. I expected more, and they would have had more, but finally, Chris Finke.
I knew you were going to mention that.
I didn't tweet anything out about it. I was running Twitter this Saturday because Randall was at the game. And I started tweeting something, and then I decided just to drop it. He did actually, it looked like he did secure the ball, and then it just got hit out.
It could have been due to the weather. I mean, it definitely factored into that.
With a clean day, who knows? That might not have happened. But I've been critical of his decision-making when he fair catches it and when he doesn't.
I guess you could say it happened at the right time because it didn't cost them.
It didn't, but it could have.
I agree.
Navy scored a touchdown, chewed up 5 minutes of the clock, scored a touchdown. And after that point, Notre Dame had been doing nothing. 3 and out the opening drive. They do manage to get a field goal the second drive, but so does Navy. And then Notre Dame punts and fumbles. Notre Dame punts, and then they force Navy to punt, but then Notre Dame fumbles it, and Navy ends up scoring 11 plays, almost 40 yards, scoring a touchdown. And then the offense did come up big. They had about a minute left over on the clock, and they were able to move the ball down the field in a minute's time, 62 yards, 7 plays, and they were able to score the touchdown. And I think I did tweet something out about if only the offense could always play with a sense of urgency, because it does seem, I don't know who to credit it to exactly, but it does seem when there's a sense of urgency that they are able to be more productive. And I know part of it is to Navy is trying to force Notre Dame. They're trying to keep the ball inbounds, keep it in front of them, not give up a big play, and force Notre Dame to march down with little dink and dunk plays and chew up the clock and hopefully not have enough time. So part of it is the defense as well.
Yeah, but before we go on, I do have to mention that you're doing it right finally. You do have your girlfriend is around this week, and right now she's somewhere else in the house taking a nap, but you're doing it right. You're getting the podcast done and making sure she knows it's important.
I have been getting a lot of flack from my friends about some things. But anyway.
But something that interesting with this game, Notre Dame only had the ball 17 minutes and 18 seconds. And that's pretty incredible. That's actually, according to Michael Birch, that's the, I'll just read it. That's Notre Dame total just 17 minutes, 18 seconds in time possession versus Navy. The Irish had not recorded, the wrong one. Notre Dame is the first FBS team to win a game with 17 minutes, 18 seconds or less since Texas defeated Rice in September 12, 2015. Texas had it for 15 minutes, 58 seconds. But when you look at the time of possession, you think there's no way a team can win with only having the ball for 17 seconds. And like you mentioned, you know, when they needed to score, they did. That's good and bad. I mean, it's good that they can do that, but it's frustrating that they just don't play with that urgency the whole time.
And I think part of it will get better as Chip Long gets more experience in calling plays. Because right now, it seems like when they get in a rhythm and...
Well, they play better with more tempo, like in the second half.
That was one thing I did want to mention. In the second half, they did score touchdowns on the first two possessions, and then they did have to punt, and it would have given Navy enough time. It would have given them about five and a half minutes left over, and they were marching down the field.
Yeah,
but the defense did come up big and force them.
Talking about Chip Long, where are you at? I mean, has he passed your expectation? I mean, has he lived up to your expectations of him calling plays? Or what do you think about the offense at this point?
I think I like it better than any other year under Brian Kelly as far as what I see them trying to do. I like that they're trying to run the football. And even when the offense has struggled against Miami, there were plays there, and you can be critical, and you were probably more critical of the play calling in that game. You can be critical of it, but there were plays there in the passing game that the players didn't execute on. And again, part of play calling is calling plays that your players can execute.
Yeah.
But I mean, you have to have both. I mean, they still have to execute.
Well, so, I'll say I was very, very frustrated with how the game started here at Navy. I mean,
you start off with two passes, and then Brandon Wimbush run for 3 yards.
But he was going to pass on that one.
Yeah.
He just took off because there was nothing there. And that actually comes down to the game plan. Like we talked about how the first so many plays are scripted. And so I don't know if you can put that on Chip Long, because that's probably a lot of the offensive coaches involved in that.
Well, and Brian Kelly definitely okays the game plan for what they want to try to attack.
But often those first plays are scripted, and why would you come out in the bad weather like this? You knew it was bad weather. Why would you come out throwing the ball like that? And obviously it was incomplete. And here's the other thing. I think if they would have scored a touchdown on that first drive, this game would have been different. I think Notre Dame let Navy hang around and gave them that confidence. When Navy thinks they can win, they just play. If you let them be in the game, they will stay in the game.
And I think that's one reason that so many of the media picked a big win for Notre Dame is because this is a good Notre Dame team. And in the past, 2012, 2015, when Notre Dame has had a really good team, they have been able to put Navy away.
Yeah.
And again, I think they had the opportunity, but since that loss since Miami, where they were shell-shocked, and since then, I don't blame them. They're not playing for the championship anymore. They're playing for pride and for something that something that won't be written in the history books.
Yeah. Here's my thoughts on Chip Long. We talked about last week, I didn't like how the Miami game, what some of the stuff they did on offense. And when you looked at it, you know, it was pretty even as far as run and pass.
Compared to previous weeks.
But I think what the difference is, you saw in this game, okay, at the end of the game, it is split up. On Notre Dame's successful drives, it's mixed up. Too often they come out, and the first drive is just pass, pass, pass. The next drive, they came out and just ran.
Yeah.
The drives that they have success with, they, you know, but some of this is on Brandon completing a pass. That makes a huge difference. But the drives they have success with, it's mixed up.
Well,
and
I know what you're saying.
They made up. They passed on one drive and they ran on the next.
I completely agree with you. But on Notre Dame's, let's just run through on their field goal drive, the second drive of the game, it was Josh Adams run for a first down, and then it was a pass, incomplete, and then it was a Wimbush run, and I'm not sure if that was a scramble or not. But you're right. Here it was still three runs to start with, but then they did mix it up after they got that first down. But on their touchdown drive of the they passed quite a bit on the final drive of the half because they were tight on time. But then on the first touchdown drive of the second half, it was run, pass to Stefferson for a touchdown.
Yeah.
So but he often does come out and run either a couple pass plays or a couple run plays to get things going, but then he does mix it up. It just so happened that it was a big play. That passing play was 30 yards, so
yeah,
they probably wouldn't have necessarily just gone back and ran it again three or four more times.
But I think this offense seemed a lot better when we still didn't know what we had in Brandon Wimbush as a passer.
Yeah.
That's what I hate. That's why Brian Kelly teams, the quarterback seem to play worse their second year because so much more is put on them. They're asked to throw the ball, and why he has success with the first-time starter. And now that Brandon has some success, it seems that we can do so much more, you know, let's throw the ball. But they had, at the beginning of the year, when they just ran, they had success.
I disagree with
you.
I think there's other factors that make it look that way. And Notre Dame's running game is not going to be as good next year. There's no doubt in my mind. I don't think anybody expects it. You lose, Josh Adams is probably gone. And the bigger thing is your two left, offensive linemen on the left side, which are NFL players, are going to need to be replaced. And they can be replaced with other NFL players, but it takes time to get back to that level.
Oh, I totally agree. But it's just, I don't have as much confidence in the play now because you know they're going to try to throw pass.
I think the reason for that is trying to develop Brandon.
I agree.
More than I think the coaching staff thinking, hey, here's what we got, something really good with Brandon. Let's exploit Navy, or let's exploit Miami of Ohio, where they passed a lot. I think it's more about trying to develop.
I agree, but how many times does he have to throw it to see that he's rattled and is not ready to be throwing the ball yet? Like, in this game, I mean, it happened in Miami, and they pulled him, brought in Book, and it helped. And his first throw, he almost got Claypool. I think it was Claypool. He almost got him killed. I mean, he went up high. I mean, he did. Later, EQ was out. But his Randall, first throw, EQ, and even the EQ, second one.
EQ or Equanimeous?
I have to say Equanimeous now. His dad does not want you to call him EQ.
We released the episode, the interview with John Brown on Sunday, and you definitely need to go listen to it. Randall talked with him on the podcast, and it was really good, really interesting. Listen to it all the way through. It's great. He definitely is an example of working on the traits and paying attention to detail, because he's a very, very detailed man when it came to raising his sons.
Yeah. And, okay, so Equanimeous after practice. Am I saying it right?
Yeah, I was just going to say, if you didn't listen to it, you might be wondering, well, why Equanimeous instead of EQ? And it's because that's what he prefers. I mean, it's not EQ, it's Equanimeous.
Yeah.
That's his name.
And I actually understand because I go by Randall, and often people ask me, like, oh, what's your name? I say Randall. I'm like, oh, do you go by Randy? I'm like, no, I just told you what my name was. It's like, so anyways, okay, so the first two throws were horrible. And so you're trying again on third, and it didn't work. I mean, Wimbush did run. But we can all see it, that if he's throwing high, that his mechanics are off. Like, it doesn't – why can't the coaching staff see that?
Well, I think they do see it. They do see it.
Don't come out throwing the ball. We know Brandon Wimbush needs to settle into the game.
Well, Randall, on that next drive, that's
they
when
– They did.
They – huh?
I mean, they did, you know, get him settled down, and that's why he played – the second half, he played incredible.
I think the key, I think, is getting him in a rhythm. And you saw against Michigan State, they came out passing, and it worked. But I think the key is you don't always know if he's going to connect on those first passes. So you're playing with fire. Either he does connect, and your offense is going to be explosive, or he doesn't, and it's going to take a few more drives to get him settled in. And like Miami, it's going to take until after halftime.
Yeah. Well, I'm not a quarterback coach. Never have been. And never will be.
Are
but
you saying you're no expert?
Exactly. Kyle's phrase, I'm no expert.
But.
Exactly. But for me, calling plays or having a game plan, I'd say you run on that first down, get 2 yards, and then you can try a pass on the second one. But don't come out.
But then you have to also pass on the third down. If it's third
down. If it doesn't. I'm saying don't plan on having Brandon Wimbush come out and throw three straight passes.
This problem will all go away once Brandon is able to connect on open receivers consistently.
I agree, but we all know he's right. It takes him time to get settled into the game. And if you start slow, it will cost you.
One, okay, you start off by asking, what are my thoughts on Chip Long?
Yeah.
Here is one criticism I do have. And it seems we have done this from Temple to now the 11th game of the season. We take shots downfield on the opening drive, in the opening set of downs often. Maybe not the opening set of downs, but the opening maybe two set. The first six plays, there's often a shot taken downfield. And Brandon Wimbush and the receivers have not connected.
Yeah.
And in the Michigan State game, there was a lot of passes to the outside, little screen passes. But that's one thing that does annoy me is that I think he's aggressive, no question about it. He is aggressive. And you like it when it works, but when it doesn't, he's going to be criticized. And I guess I'm criticizing him until it starts working.
Well, with those shots downfield, it shows me that they know that if they can get a big play at the beginning of the game, they know they can kind of demoralize the other team. And in my mind, okay, you had that mindset. Don't plan on throwing the ball on every down or the first couple of plays.
Yeah.
But whatever. I think you'll get – this is just the second year that Chip Long has been calling plays. And so,
I think the play calling will continue to get better. And there have been some, there were a couple of games that were excellent.
It just seems like this offense has.
Well, I think it's because the defense now sees a little more some of the shortcomings of Brandon Wimbush. They see what he can't do as well.
Yeah.
And I still think that Brandon Wimbush in the offseason, I think that he can go ahead and I think he can make noticeable strides and have a really good junior season.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. I'm not...
Junior/senior.
Yeah.
Randall, did you read the article from Eric Hansen about Notre Dame, about comparing Brandon Wimbush's first year as a starter to some of the other quarterbacks in college football?
No, I didn't.
Okay. All right. Are you ready to go through the different position groups?
Sure.
All right, let's start...
Well, I'll just say it, that Navy, you can almost throw everything from this game out, especially on defense. Just, it's Navy, it's the triple option. And I think Notre Dame did really good. There was no long plays that they gave up. And
I think the defense played, I think they played very, very well.
And good.
Because the first half, it's a three and out. It's not a three and out. It's 11 plays, but it's turnover on downs. And then they are able to get within field goal range on the next set of downs, and they score a field goal. And then they force what would have been a three and out, but Notre Dame fumbles it, gives them great field position, and they score a touchdown. And then in the second half, they open up with a long drive, almost 8 minutes off the clock, and a touchdown. But then they force a missed field goal, and then they get the interception. And then finally, when Navy's trying to tie the game, they're able to stop Navy on down. So in the second half, when it mattered most, the last two drives, they forced an interception, and then they forced Navy a turnover on downs.
Yeah.
I guess the only criticism is that their drive did have long, sustained drives. They chewed up the clock.
Yeah, exactly. But that was better than giving it. They didn't give up those long runs that Navy often has. But when people want to say, oh, you know, Notre Dame should have beaten them, whatever, I wish for once that Alabama, I would want to see Alabama play Navy.
Mm-hmm.
Just see what
Ohio State did it a few years ago.
Ohio State did it.
And it was closer. It wasn't like.
And they lost the next week.
Did they? Oh, was that when they lost to
Virginia Tech?
Virginia Tech, okay.
I think it's the year they won the championship.
I was thinking it was earlier than that, but.
I have to go back and check.
But I'm not sure.
I would love to see some other teams play Navy, some big school, Alabama, Clemson, Oakland. Just see what they would do against Navy.
I don't think it's true anymore that Notre Dame doesn't get any respect for beating Navy. I don't think that's true.
No, Navy is a good team.
Navy has proven to be a top 25 team the last 4 or 5 years, and a win against Navy is a good win. And I do think the national media does recognize that for the most part. You'll have fans of Ohio State and other schools that will look at Navy as, oh, that's a cupcake. It's one of the academies. It's no different than playing the Citadel. But to educated fans, it is different.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think I'd interrupted you.
Well, I just wanted to point some of that out before. You know, that this is completely different. Triple option, the defense, some things you saw here. It's hard to use this to predict what Notre Dame will do playing Stanford.
Yeah.
But it was a horrible, and the weather-wise, it was horrible.
You were at the game. What was the atmosphere like?
It definitely wasn't as loud as the USC game, which was the last game I was at. And a lot of people actually left. Like, second half stands were pretty empty. It was cold. Well, it wasn't extremely cold, but it was just raining, misting the whole night. And
it looked
you had to wear
miserable
raincoats and ponchos. And yeah, the one thing that was, I kind of found this out after the game. I completely forgot about the marshmallow, the seniors throwing marshmallows. And they were actually doing it. I didn't even notice it when we were there, but they were throwing marshmallows. Did you see it watching the game?
No.
Anyways, I guess we thought that the student section seemed empty or took a long time to fill it up. Well, now there are stories coming out. I think if you go over on ND.
You're serious? You did notice that the student section was?
We did. There's comments over on ndnation.com, their forum, that some of the students' parents were saying that security was so worried about keeping these marshmallows out of there that some of them waited in line for like an hour and missed most of the first quarter. And some people got trampled because people were just trying to get in. They said there were at least three people were trampled and taken away on stretchers. And they were told to remove their coats. Somebody else said that they claimed that some of the guys had to open their pants. They even checked their pants.
No, like unbuckle their pants.
Here's what the comment was. One of his friends even demanded to undo his pants and had a county deputy physically search inside his pants. He said the whole situation was close to exploding into a riot all over marshmallows.
I don't believe that.
Well, whatever. There, but there something did happen because we didn't notice it was slow to fill up.
I believe that part that they were checking
okay,
them
so
out.
Okay, so this whole thing.
The specific.
I personally didn't know if we got in like an hour before the game, we were in the stadium. But one reason I want to point this out is I keep blaming fans for the atmosphere at Notre Dame. Like, we need to be loud and, you know, try to get to the Miami. Like, it had that home field advantage where teams don't want to come play because it's so loud. And well, obviously, Notre Dame itself doesn't want to get there. I mean, that's part of the problem right there.
You're saying they're setting up obstacles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, seriously.
I understand that it's a mess to clean up 1,000 marshmallows, and yeah, it's a pain to do. I'm sure they hate to do it, whoever is in charge of whatever.
It's the last cleanup. Game. It's the last home game. They have a year to clean it up.
I know, but it's Thanksgiving weekend coming up. They don't want to.
They can wait. They'll do it next week. Snow will cover it up. But what I'm saying is some of it has to do with Notre Dame itself, dude. Yeah. I don't think Notre Dame will ever let it get to that point. But anyways, fans, do as much as you possibly can to make it.
I watched an interview on Colin Cowherd's show. He was interviewing Reggie Bush and Matt Leinart, and they were talking about 2005 when USC came to Notre Dame, and Notre Dame almost got the upset but didn't. And they said that was one of the loudest atmospheres that they've ever been in, and they couldn't hear each other. They would be yelling, but they couldn't hear Matt when he was in the huddle.
Yeah.
So,
well,
I think Notre Dame Stadium can get aroused when...
way to term it there.
When you can't get too turned up for Navy. And I know I just said that they're a good opponent, and they are, but they're not going to garner the same kind of reaction as if Miami comes or if USC or Stanford.
I totally agree. There's like a respect with Nate between Notre Dame and Navy fans, even the player. It's just different. But one of my friends is an usher at Notre Dame, and he said was the last home game, was it Wake Forest, when they remember they got, the band was warned because the coach, I hadn't caught all this, but I guess Wake Forest coach, they had like two penalties on the offensive line. And so he complained about the band, and that's how they got the penalty, or they didn't get a penalty. They got the warning. And as an usher, he's been doing it for a couple years now. Right after that, and if you go back and watch the replay, you can hear the crowd. He said that is the loudest Notre Dame Stadium has ever been, and they've like screwed up the third down play. But so they can be that loud.
Yeah.
That's what annoys me. The fan, everybody can be that loud, but it's just not there.
Well, this is the first year with the new stadium, with the Jumbotron. Hopefully they'll be able to pump up the crowd more with the video board and some of that production stuff.
Yeah.
Randall, anyways, you said there was a lot of respect between Navy fans and Notre Dame fans, but I thought you saw someone that was kind of not so in the proper spirit.
There was one guy behind us that was yelling out crude count, just screaming at the top of his lungs after every play in the second half. I'm not sure where he was at the first half because I didn't notice him. But the second half...
what was he saying?
He was completely hammered. And he kept talking about the Navy and the seamen. So he had all kinds of comments and yelling and carrying on. I tried to get a video of him. And when I was actually on my phone, he came up and he turned and he like put like right in front of me and like turned his face towards me and was trying to get me to take a picture of him. I mean, he was just...
I'm surprised that people didn't complain or that ushers didn't usher
him
out.
I was completely shocked. So... there's at least one guy.
People are complaining when someone stands up, and yet no one's complaining with this guy.
You don't hear that anymore. People aren't worried as much about standing up.
Yeah,
I think that's kind of changed a little bit.
I would have complained with what that guy was saying.
It would have been annoying. A couple times, but it was just on and on.
Yeah, it would have been annoying.
It was. Well, at that point, the stadium wasn't that full. But I was kind of surprised with what... Well, I guess I was just bashing Notre Dame for letting the atmosphere, not having that atmosphere. But I guess they did let that guy go. And I guess with that, you know, with the, all the sound, Tony was claiming, I haven't gone back to check it, Tony was claiming that at Miami they played their rap music up until the ball was snapped. And so that's obviously different. But Brian Kelly didn't complain about it. I guess, you know, the Wake Forest coach complained about Notre Dame. That's how they got the warning. So maybe that's on Brian Kelly not being a whiner like every sports player is.
And I would like to go back. You just told me about this. I would like to go back and watch it again to see if I could hear that.
Yeah.
I don't remember it from watching it.
Anyway,
offensive side of the ball, offensive line, got a couple seniors there. And at the end of the year, we'll talk more about who's not coming back. But so, if you mention it, whatever. But let's not spend too much time talking about different guys that had their last home game at Notre Dame.
The only thing I'll say with that is that I'm pretty sure Quentin Nelson isn't going. I mean, you saw him, McClinchy, kind of their last moments in the tunnel. And even though I've been saying Drew Tranquil is coming back, I think he did. Some of the stuff he said, Brian Kelly said, and just kind of the way everything was, it seems kind of...
He's going to get married and maybe not even go to the NFL. I think he's just going to do something else.
He's going to the NFL. We need to make a bet on this.
I'm sure he'll try out for the NFL, and I think he has a shot, but he's not like, oh, clearly he'll be picked before the third round. He's not that kind of guy.
No, but look at what James Anawalu, he's playing for the Chargers, and who would you take? Would you take Anawalu or...
No, I would take Drew.
Tranquil.
I would take, yeah, Tranquil.
So,
any more about the offensive line?
I don't really know what the... It seems like the holes for Josh aren't there. I expect the offensive line to push Navy around a lot more than they did. And I'm not sure what... It kind of starts with them. I mean, everything kind of starts and stops with what the offensive line is doing. And the run game isn't the same. This whole offense isn't the same. It's not like they're making big mistakes, but they're not making these big plays either. And
I still think it comes down to if teams are able to cheat more on the running game defensively with Brandon struggling.
Yeah, that's true.
So, yeah.
The one, Bars and Kramer were called for a chop block, and that was on a Wimbush 30-yard run, but they knew it. I mean, Bars knew it because as soon as he saw Kramer, he
disengaged
quickly as he could, but they did call it.
It was funny to hear that called against Notre Dame.
I know. I was expecting it. When they were talking about chop block, I was expecting it to go against Navy. The offensive line didn't play bad either. I had expect them to push them around a little more and create holes for the running backs, and that wasn't quite the case. But, yeah, I don't have too much more on them.
Notre Dame really didn't have that many plays offensively. Well,
the offense wasn't on the field that much.
No. Let's talk about the running backs. Josh Adams carried the ball pretty much had all the running back carries, 18 carries for 106 yards, and then Tony Jones Jr. had 3 carries for 20 yards.
When I heard after game when we were talking about it, somebody said, oh, he had over 100 yards. I was like, what? No, he didn't. But
you just chip away.
That's what I mean. That's why you run the ball. Josh Adams can chip away and still ends up with 106 yards. That's why I complain when they come out and pass 3 straight times. But he did have a long of 30. He talked a little bit about it. They interviewed him on the post game show, and he said he should have finished that. But I mean, obviously he's kind of beat up. He kind of knows himself.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's tough to see. I mean, how long has it been since we saw? It's been a couple games since we saw him break off one of those long runs.
It has been.
But he was also, Josh Adams was also blocking good. On Wimbush's long run, Josh Adams was the guy that blocked for him. I think it was like 20-some yard gain. And then there was one play where Josh Adams, I think he was messing with his knee brace, or he had a cut in his knee or something, and he went off the field. And then Tony Jones came in, and his first carry, they went to him right away. His first carry went for 21 yards, I believe.
I think 17 was his
long. Was it 17? Okay. Wimbush was 21.
Yeah.
And Jones was 17. But, you know, he hasn't been healthy either, so I think he's the guy that, you know, he can step up next year. But it's kind of odd not to see Dexter. This week we only had two running backs with carries.
All right, and then tight ends.
Alize Mack had a drop. And
over on the forums, Irish Don had put out the number. I believe Alize needs to catch 5 passes with 0 drops to get above 80%.
He won't do that.
I believe that was the number. I don't believe that'll happen either.
Well, he didn't even have a reception in this game, did he?
No.
Let's
talk about, or
we'll mention that one pass. Oh my word, that was. Which that was on Wimbush.
Yeah.
But it was a couple feet. I mean, it was feet. It wasn't even yards. And they knew right away that it was bad. But
that's the problem. Wimbush is inside his own head. I mean,
and the coaches should know that.
Well, what do you want to, what do you do? What are you saying? Do you just play book, Ian Book?
No. Just get the running game going and give him some easy passes, which I guess that was.
He could almost have handed that off.
But they need to figure out what some of those plays are that he likes, like the ones to the left with a guy coming across, with Stefferson coming across the middle.
Yeah,
Boykins did it. Earlier, he hits that every time.
No, earlier it was high. He was off. Yeah, it was high. True.
But find the pass that he likes and get him comfortable.
Oh, they are doing that. I'm very confident that they're trying to cater to the plays he wants to run. They have to be.
Yeah, it might be, but
I just think he has a major lack of confidence, and the only way to get it is with repetition, doing it. The off season can help too, getting mechanics even think about, and then doing it next year in live action, just doing it and having success.
Here's something else. They played faster in the second half, and Wimbush played better. So if he's rattled, the more time he has to think about it, I mean, it gets to him. He can't let it go. But with Mack, he was open on one play for the touchdown, and he threw it across the middle. Was it when Stefferson dropped it? But there was another play, kind of like that. Mack was running to the outside, and he had him wide open. Both of the guys covering were behind him, and he didn't even throw it to him.
Mm-hmm.
So that connection just isn't there.
Yeah, let's just keep on talking about wide receivers. Stefferson had a career day, 5 catches, 103 yards, 2 touchdowns, was targeted 8 times. Boykin recorded a catch, 2 for 33, and then Claypool, 2 for 28. Randall, I was looking over the box score here, and I noticed that Notre Dame had 3 players catch a ball, and that's same as Navy. Navy had 3 players catch a ball. Now, they only had a total of 3 catches over on Navy's side, whereas Notre Dame had a total of 9, but I still thought,
well, it's odd. 2 running backs ran the ball, and 3 wide receivers caught a pass. It's a strange box score. But EQ got destroyed on that hit. But I guess he's okay. His dad told me after the game, was like, yeah, he was like, thank God he's okay. But that looked brutal.
Mm-hmm. In slow motion, it looked worse.
And it looked like he was out, just the way they started. They had it on the Jumbotron, but they don't replay injuries, and you could see it how it started, and it looked like he was completely out. I don't know for sure, but I think he's in the concussion protocol now. They're watching him for head injury. So
concussion,
who knows?
Concussion protocol for that?
Well,
I'm sure they're going through some kind of protocol.
Yeah. But he was out cold. I'd say he had a concussion. It sure looked like he had one.
I'd say that he cracked his neck.
But it'll be interesting to see if he'll be able to play. against Stanford.
I don't think there is. I don't think it plays.
I don't know. But Stefferson is obviously, I mean, to see him doing what he's doing and not having played for part of the year, he did have two drops, and the one was a touchdown.
And the one, I mean, it was right there, bounced off his chest.
But I did notice he wasn't wearing gloves. He just taped up his fingers. I don't know, because that was because of the rain. But, you know, we've talked about that.
I don't think any of the receivers were.
Okay, I didn't check the others. But he did very good. He also, what I like to see from him, he's fighting for the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And he got a pass interference call because, you know, he was trying to get to the ball. And he's doing that, what we wanted to see out of the other receivers and hadn't at the beginning of the year. So he's playing very aggressive. I mean, he's got speed. Yeah, now let's just make sure that he's eligible for every game next year. I was surprised to see how much Boykins was out there.
Mm-hmm.
And he did, you know, he had two receptions. It looked like it was basically the same play. One was to Stefferson, and the next play did the same thing and threw it to Boykins. There was one where he should have had, it could have been a touchdown, but I think Wimbush overthrew him. But anyways, only three receivers with catches.
Brandon Wimbush finished the year, similar stat lines to what he has been. 9 of 18, 50% completion, 164 yards, two touchdowns, zero interceptions. And again, we've been critical. Fans have been very critical. But at least Brandon Wimbush, for the most part of the season, has not turned the ball over. He's done a good job of getting a few touchdowns. He also had a rushing touchdown, too, 41 yards on the ground. So at least he hasn't been a turnover machine. I mean, the Miami was different, but for the most part of this year, he hasn't been the reason Notre Dame's been turning the ball over.
Wasn't his rushing touchdown right after Stefferson dropped the ball?
We
all knew he was going to run it in. But
I think it was...
It was a bad play on one of the receivers, and so we all knew that he was going to run it in because he didn't trust the receivers after what happened.
Yeah. But I'm pretty sure that was the one that was at the end of the half.
Yeah. Do you think it's better? Now, you know, we used to want him to see what the wide receivers were doing, take his time, step in the pocket. Do you like this better than when he took off and ran after his first read? Because he's not running the ball like he used to.
No. Which, if they would have had more possessions, he probably would have ran it more. He ran it 8 times for 41 yards, whereas normally he probably would have ended up running it for 12 times if they would have had the same amount of plays. It's kind of, he's effective as a runner.
Yeah.
And so until he grows as a passer, I think he needs to be able, or he needs to continue to run the football effectively.
And I think he's still learning. You know, he ran too much at the beginning. Now maybe sometimes he should take off, and he doesn't. But he's still learning from that. He did that one pass to Stefferson. Was high for Stefferson, and they ended up having to kick a field goal. I mean, there's a couple times that they could have put more points on the board. He should have been intercepted right before half. He basically threw it to the defensive player, and they dropped it. So maybe it's how Wimbush is throwing the ball, because even the defense
maybe no one can catch it.
So
Miami sure could.
That, you know, there was some close calls, but I mean, overall he was 50%. So,
all right, defensive side of the ball. Let's just start off with giving some love to Martini. He led the team with tackles, 15 tackles, unbelievable. They had a special defense for Navy. Love was back at safety, and we saw a ton of Martini out there. Nick Watkins didn't play, and I think
Troy Pride got his first start.
Yeah,
and Julian Love actually started at safety.
Yeah, I said that, Randall.
Okay, I was looking at this tweet. I was trying to find a tweet of Martini. So I'll throw this at you. So Greer Martini has 184 career tackles. How many do you think have come against triple option?
How many does he have?
184.
184. I'm gonna say that seven. Nah, that's too many. Probably 50. Okay, 50 have been against Navy.
61, which Hold means it. A third of his tackles have come against triple option.
That is crazy.
So if he can find an NFL team that plays triple option every week, he'd be the star.
Well, yeah, he had a great game. He got the game ball from Brian Kelly, and he deserved it. I'm very happy for him.
He was always there. I mean, he was everywhere.
But, yeah, let's start with the defensive line. Tagovailoa-Mosa and Kurt Heinisch both had some big plays. The two freshmen, they at least Kurt Heinisch, you know, missed some as well. But they were able to come up and make some plays, which is good as true freshmen.
Yeah, Tagovailoa-Mosa, his brother plays for Navy. And here's the crazy part. His brother's name is Amosa Tagovailoa. Like, it's switched.
And I was only halfway listening when they were talking about it on the broadcast, and I don't understand
all of it. Somehow it was how the name was alphabetical order at Navy. I'm not sure what it all is. Anyways, it's switched for some reason.
Well, it's two last names, right?
Yeah, but they're brothers, and
so the one has
it's the second week in a row that Notre Dame has had brothers, one on each. From Notre Dame and That's then right. on the opposing team because we had McIntosh against Miami. But I thought he played really good. He had a big tackle for loss. I mean, he was in the backfield and made the tackle. He had somebody help. And then you mentioned Heinisch. He actually came. He tackled the guy from behind, and it was on a third down, so they forced the fourth down on that. The bad thing about that was, I think, on the fourth down, then Khalid Kareem missed the tackle, and they converted on the fourth down. But Kareem also had a big play. Their one pass, he took out the quarterback. I mean, he just leveled him. But you could see the respect between Notre Dame and Navy. I mean, he actually helped up the quarterback. I mean, you never see that between two opposing teams. But, you know, after he took him out, he stopped and helped him up off the ground. And so, obviously, these guys were having fun out there. And
who was the false start on the fourth down?
Jay Hayes.
Was it Jay Hayes?
Yes, okay. Offsides on fourth down.
Yeah, that was heartbreaking.
Him. Yeah. And I think they were just trying to see what Notre Dame was going to do.
No, they were going to go for it.
You think so?
Yeah. Man, they went for it about a dozen times. I know.
What was the yardage on that? Well,
they converted. What do you mean?
No, it was fourth and how many yards?
It was enough that...
Well, we weren't sure. Watching the game, we weren't sure.
I forget now.
And then we're like, they're going to kick, and then they brought out the team, then he had the offsides, and then, well, now they don't need to decide. But, yeah, that was disheartening. And then Trumbetti, he had a big game, too. Like, mm-hmm. He was all over. I mean, he's played a lot in most games, but it's not like you see... I mean, he's out there... But it's not like he's the star on the defense. Yeah. But he also dropped in coverage and had a big...
He had a big hit. That was a big hit.
Yeah, that guy's going to feel that for a while. And then also the last play, Navy's last play of the game, he had pressure on the... It wasn't the quarterback. But the guy that was throwing it was a slot back or halfback, whichever one of them it was. He had pressure on him. And, he also knocked a pass out of the hands of one of the wide receivers when he was in coverage. They thought it looked like he was going to make a catch, but somehow he knocked it out. And he had a very big game, and it was his last game at Notre Dame.
And then linebackers, we already talked about Martini, the big game that he had. Coney had a big game again, 10 tackles. And then... Morgan had 5 tackles.
One other thing with the defense, like Dalen Hayes made the quarterback pitch the ball early. When they fumbled it, Navy recovered it. But part of the reason that fumble happened is because Dalen Hayes was getting pressure and he pitched it earlier than he wanted to.
Mm-hmm. I missed Tranquil there too. Tranquil had 8. So very productive group of linebackers today. They were making plays.
Shoot, I was going to mention something else with Trumbetti when we started talking about linebackers, but now I don't remember what it was. They could, if he doesn't, depending on how his career goes, NFL, he'd be a guy that you could bring back to coach the...
He's not going to the NFL, Randall.
The defense for the triple option.
Martini or...
Martini.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
He's also not going to the NFL.
Well, I'm guessing he's going to try to see what happens. He might sign with somebody or... I don't know. He didn't even start all the game. I haven't really looked at it yet, but... He's a guy that if he wants to coach, I'm sure that somebody would hire him to help coach the defense against triple option.
He seems like a very relational person.
Yeah.
Maybe not loud, but very engaging.
When he talks, interviews, and stuff, I still think he's related to Harry Heaston.
I still think he's related to Ben Roethlisberger.
But... Tranquil had a big game, and was he credited? Was that a sack?
Who?
Tranquil.
No, he had a tackle for loss. Okay. Two tackle for loss.
Okay. But yeah, and this type of defense or this game does favor the linebackers. I mean, they're able to make big plays, or they have chances to make big plays.
All right, so we have a little bit different lineup, like we mentioned, from the cornerbacks. Pride got his first start. We saw a lot. You were right, Randall. We did see a lot of Crawford out there, too. Crawford had 7 tackles. Pride had 6. And then normally our cornerback, Love, who was playing at safety, had 14.
Wow, that's a lot. Pride, I think here's where his speed... kind of helped play. I mean,
we didn't mention, but yeah, he got the interception.
Oh yeah,
as well, had a tackle for loss too.
Yeah, and Brian Kelly talked about him in one of his press conferences that, you know, he was kind of playing on the outside earlier this year, but here he got into the mix and he became more of a complete player in this game.
I wonder what's going on with Watkins. I mean, I can believe that. Well, maybe it's just the tendonitis is still just acting up. Maybe.
Well, but I agree. I don't know for sure, but I wonder, my theory is that we saw what happened with him after the Texas game last year. He had no confidence.
Was that Watkins or was that, I thought it was Coleman.
Oh, that was Coleman. I was thinking Watkins. But yeah, I don't know what.
But I could see it maybe be somewhat of a similar thing where.
The confidence just isn't, yeah. You lose a little bit of confidence and.
It's just weird because.
It's not like he's been playing horrible
either. I know. But yeah, Pride has looked pretty good. And I think we'll probably see him more than Nick Watkins against Stanford. I just don't know what's going on with Watkins right now.
Well, Pride has that speed. I mean, he ran track. I mean, he was, you know, running state when he was in high school and he's run track at Notre Dame. I mean, he's the speed guy. And so, you know, depending on what the matchup is, I mean, it worked well. He can get to the ball, like against Navy, moving around. And so I think that's why he got the start in the Navy game. I could see them, you know, maybe he might not necessarily get the start against Stanford. I think it was kind of a situational. But, yeah, he was very impressive. Julian Love was called for that horse collar. That was very questionable.
I think
it was basically the jersey. I mean, technically, that is according to rules.
That's what they said.
I mean, it has changed a little bit, and so, yeah. Elliot, playing safety, he was the reason Navy converted. It was like 3rd and 16, and he missed a tackle, and so they converted on that. And then he also gave up touchdown, the one passing touchdown where it was wide open. And... the announcer talked about it a little bit. It looked like he was expecting Crawford to kind of switch with him because he turned the other way, and I think he thought the other guy was going to get him, and nobody did. And so.
So it was either him or Crawford.
Miscommunication there. So.
All right.
But yeah, it was Navy. Defense is going to look completely different next. It's hard to tell what we're going to see.
Okay. That's all we got. Thank you guys for listening. Randall, anything more?
Well, you had mentioned Fink dropped to
special teams, yeah.
The punt. But Jones also dropped one of the kickoffs, but recovered it pretty quickly. But it was a bad day. It was raining. Tyler Newsom, he's either good or bad. So, and Justin Yoon was good on his one field goal.
Do you think, does Notre Dame drop in the polls? Number 8 on Saturday, they beat Navy. I think they stay the same, is what I think.
I do too. The only thing I was trying to decide, because Ohio State obviously they put up big numbers against Illinois, but
it's Illinois.
Yeah, I think the committee knows who Navy is, and I think it kind of stays the same.
All right, thank you guys for listening. Check back on Wednesday. We'll have our preview episode for Notre Dame Stanford, and later in the week on Thursday we'll have an interview with Hank Waddles that'll be up on the pod. Be available as well. So, thank you guys for listening, and until next time, go Irish.
Go Irish.